I did it before because I'll be all right. Okay, we're talking about the life of the Be'er Mayim Chaim. And continue with some really fascinating insights into his life. We have the last part of his life. There's a lot of biographical information. And as I told you last time, a large part of it is coming from the tzaddikim from the house of Skelana, from the Skelana Rabbi and Shlita and his father, who had a direct link to his father, to people who actually saw the Be'er Mayim Chaim. So most of the Meisim, most of the stories that you're hearing are really have been validated by eyewitnesses coming down through this Skelana Rebbe. The last thing we're talking about was the realization on the part of the Be'er Mayim Chaim that he's going to have to leave Europe. He's going to have to certainly leave Chernivitz. At that time, approximately the beginning of the 19th century, 1803, 1804, the war that was taking place between Austria and Romania, and the Austrians took over, and they decided to make Chernivitz a capital city of that entire area, and that was bad news for the Jews. Whenever a Jewish town would be made into a capital of a non-Jewish district, that spelled trouble for the Jews, and that did over here as well, because a decree was passed that there was going to have to be secular education. There was going to have to be secular education for the Jewish children, and that it was forbidden to make minyanim, to form minyanim in the shuls. The Be'er Mayim Chaim, only through tremendous mesiras nefesh, the Be'er Mayim Chaim was able to bring about the postponement of the decree regarding the children going to secular schools, keeping in mind that these decrees were initiated not by non-Jews. These were initiated by maskilim. These were by Jews who were the enlightened Jews who didn't like the fact that the old school continued without any secular education. And if you want to judge them l'kaf schus, we could say that since the non-Jewish government was promising that if the Jews would become acculturated, if they would become acculturated and they would join the rest of society, then they would be given equal rights. And the Maskilim, of course, not only believed this lie, but they became the greatest proponents of this lie. And they therefore put a tremendous amount of pressure on the tzaddikim and the yeshivas and so on throughout Europe. It wasn't only in Romania and Galicia and Lita and Poland, as you know, the tremendous pressure was put on the yeshivas to close, or to at least allow secular education into the Beis Medrash. And that's the reason why the great yeshiva of Volozhin was closed, as I'm sure you know. Volozhin was closed because the Netziv refused. The Netziv said, we're closing shop. We're not going to change the curriculum of Torah. At any rate, the Be'er Mayim Chaim fought courageously against this, but as a result of the battle, he realized that his life was becoming increasingly endangered by staying over there. So he, at this time in his life, we're talking about 1803, 1804, he decided that he was going to go to Eretz Yisrael. But we have a lot of interesting stories of what happened along the way to Eretz Yisrael, as we have very often with the tzaddikim of those days, since you know that the trip to Eretz Yisrael was not just going over to Tower or to El Al right? So it wasn't a simple matter going to Eretz Yisrael. So we have stories along the way. But first, we're going to discuss a little bit of what took place in Chernivitz before the Rebbe left. First of all, the shul in Chernivitz, which was always called, if you know Mishpacha from Chernivitz, they'll tell you Reb Chaim Chernivitz's shul. That was one of the most famous shuls in all of Europe. And we're going to learn tonight why, what was so different about Reb Chaim Chernivitz's shul, what happened there. So Kodem Kol, we know that before he left Chernivitz to begin his trip to Eretz Yisrael, the Be'er Mayim Chaim called over the Gabbai, and he told the Gabbai that the minion that he had by his house. You see, Reb Chaim Chernivitz on Shabbos davened in the big shul because he was the Rav of Chernivitz, so he davened in the big shul. That was an Ashkenaz shul. There was Shtiblach in Chernivitz too, but he davened in the big shul, and he had connected to his house, he had a little shtibah, a little bit smedrish. That's what he davened during the day, during the week, and that's what he had shalosh shudas and so on. So he said to the gabbai that bit smedrish that was attached to his house, he made a gzeira that it's forbidden to ever sell, it's forbidden to sell that. He told the gabbai, the Rosh Kohal, the head of the community, he told him that it's forbidden to sell that shul, to sell his shul, even to a Jew. And it said that it's also Lazaro, that shul can never be sold. And he said the following warning. Achzois teidu ki kol mi shalo yishma el devarai bezeh ani orvis rivo. And it should be known, and this was told to the entire city, that whoever does not listen, whoever does not heed this ruling, that this decree that the shul should never be sold to anybody else. So the Reb Chaim Chernevitz said that I'm warning that person that I will go in Shemayim and fight against him in Shemayim. So the Sklena Rebbe said that this shul, we'll talk a little bit more about in a few minutes, this shul was never sold until World War II. And even after World War II, Reb Chaim Chernevitz's shul was left untouched by the communists and was one of the only three shuls in that entire area that was actually allowed to be used. The communists closed down all the shuls in the entire area, and Reb Chaim Chernevitz's shul was always called Reb Chaim Chernevitz's shul, and it was left open, and it was functioning until I'm not sure when, in the 1950s at some point, exactly when, but that the shul was being used, and with Mesiris Nefesh, that Reb Chaim Chernevitz has said there should always be a minion there, that until the 50s, there was always a minion there for Shachas Milchamar, and if you know something about the history of that, of Romania, you know, something about the history of that area, so then you realize that's a nice nigla, that's a revealed miracle that everybody recognizes being from Chaim Chernevitz. Also, before he left, he brought the entire city came to bid farewell. We're going to come back to this later on. Reb Chaim Chernevitz had a son, Reb Kolonimus Kalman. And this son, Reb Kolonimus Kalman, was not a Bentora at all. Was not a Bentora. It's not clear exactly. Later on we'll talk a little bit more about it. It's not clear exactly how far off the path he was. There are some tzaddikim that unfortunately had children that were not tzaddikim, and usually the attempt was made to cover that up. In this case, we have statements from the Be'er Mayim Chaim himself indicating that he had a great deal of Agmas Nefesh from his son. And before he left Chernevitz, his son was not going with him, before he left Chernevitz, we have a record from the city that he begged his son to return to the proper path. We don't know how far exactly he strayed away. This doesn't mean to say that he wasn't Shomer Shabbos, but it seems that he definitely was not a Ben Torah. And Reb Chaim Chernevitz, before he left Chernevitz, he asked his son to return to the right way, and his son made a promise. And we know that after that, there was a significant change in his behavior. We'll come back to that in Yitzhak Shem later on. Before he left Chernevitz, Reb Chaim made three promises to the people of Chernevitz. And again, we have this as a Kabbalah from the Sklena Rebbe, who heard it from his father, who heard it from Zakenim from Chernevitz, who were there at the time. That he made three promises. The first promise he made is that La'olam, until as long as the city of Chernevitz exists and there are Jews there, that there'll be Parnasa Mitzuya. That there'll be a Parnasa for the Jews there. Does that mean there wasn't such thing as an Ani? No. And we know that he was begging people to take Aniim into their homes. But it meant that in general that there would be a Parnasa Mitzuya. And that was absolutely true for all the years that in Chernevitz the financial standing of the Jews in Chernevitz was significantly better than in other places in Europe. The second promise he made was that if there will ever be a sreifa, a fire in the city, that it will not have it will not cause a great deal of damage. And that was also, as the Sklena said, true, unusual of the cities and towns of that time. And the third promise he made was that there's going to come an Ace Tsar El Yaakov. He said that he felt that there was coming a dark cloud over Europe, over the Jewish people. And he said there's going to come soon. He said an Ace Tsar El Yaakov. But he promised the Jews of Chernevitz that the decree, the Gezerah, would not affect the entire city, the entire population. Whereas in other cities, the Jews of those cities are going to be wiped out. He says such a thing. And the Sklener Rebbe said, the last Sklener Rebbe said that, Lemaisa, one of the most remarkable things that happened during World War II is that the selection that was made and by Chernivtsi did not take out from Chernivtsi more than 50% of the people, the Jews of that city, which was unheard of. That not even 50% of the Jews of Chernivtsi were taken to be killed, and that's a terrible thing. I'm not saying not even, but compared to the other cities, not even 50%, and also. As far as the other haftachas that were made, as I said, regarding the parnosa and the sreifa, the Sklener said that these haftachas were kept, and even the non-Jewish population, and they had many, many maskilim in Chernivtsi. Chernivtsi was famous for its non-religious culture, Jewish culture, that even the maskilim believed that this was from the bracha of Reb Chaim Chernivtsi. Regarding the coming back again for a minute to the Beis Medrash, he also said at that time that because of his Hakaras HaTov, how good they were to him, so Rav Chaim Chernivtsi said that even though he's going to be in many different places until he leaves the world, he's always going to be called Rav Chaim Chernivtsi. And that's also true that even though he was in Chernivtsi altogether 18 years of his life, nevertheless, he's called Reb Chaim Chernivtsi, and that was a promise that he made that forever he will be known until Mashiach as Chaim Chernivtsi. As far as the shul, another thing with the shul is that right after World War I, an electric Ner Tamid was lit. Lekoved the neshama in memory of the neshama of Chaim Chernivtsi. Electric bulb was lit, and the Sklener Rebbe said, and there were many many Adim that said that electric bulb that was lit there stayed until World War II. One bulb from the end of World War I until World War II, and that bulb didn't go out. And apparently, once the Churban took place in Europe. So the Sklener Rebbe said that when the Germans Yamach Shemam came to Chernivtsi, then the bulb went out, and they saw that as a very bad simon of what it meant for the Churban Bechlal that was going on. But from World War I to World War II, that electric light didn't go out. Another story that we have from the Sklener, from this period, the last few weeks that he remained there. And related to the warnings that he gave not to tamper with his Beis Medrash, there was the Sklener Rebbe said that this was actually after Sklener left, that next to the Beis Medrash there was a wealthy non-Jew by the name of Miller, who owned a factory by his house right next door to the Beis Medrash, Reb Chaim Chernivtsi's shul, and the Sklener said that this particular fellow was always trying to have the Beis Medrash closed down. He was trying to have the Beis Medrash closed down. I guess it didn't have a variance. Chaim Chernivtsi still didn't have proper variances, right? Yeah, no, I mean the Beis Medrash didn't have. Oh, but he wasn't Jewish in Chanam. No, yeah. So he was always trying to have the Beis Medrash closed. And he was causing a lot of tsaros for the Beis Medrash and bothering the people that were there. And he tried to always to buy the area. This is already after Reb Chaim left, just to show you the Indian of that shul. So, what happened was that he hired another fellow, a non-Jew, to be the shomer of the factory. That he should sleep there at night to watch the factory. And it happened that once this fellow, there's a short time after the factory was built, that he was in the middle of the night, he saw a fire coming from the Beis Medrash. He saw a fire coming from the shul. He doesn't care about the shul, but he was worried that it was going to, you know how it went over there, if something burned down, it was a matter of minutes and that was it for the town. So, and the, The Gvir was living next door and the factory was there. So he ran in, the Shomer ran into Miller's house and he started to scream that the factory is in danger and the house is in danger because there's a sreifa, there's a fire in the Jewish, shul. So Miller ran to the, ran outside and he looked and everything was dark, everything was quiet and there's nothing wrong. So he said, he thought that the Shomer had a little bit too much to drink, which was probably his minig, anyway. And he told him to leave him alone. He went back to sleep. And a half hour later, this fellow is wide awake and he's staring out. He's afraid. He's looking out the window and he sees that it was taka dark for a while. But then there's again a fire coming out with flames and a whole thing coming out from the Beis Medrash. And he runs back into Miller's house. And he starts to scream to wake up. The whole place is going to be on fire. He runs again to the window and he says to them now that, you know, you're a Meshuggah. And if you wake me up again, I'm going to kill you. So this fellow didn't know what to do, and he went to lie down on the other side of the factory outside. He was afraid. In the meantime, Miller went to sleep, and he as soon as he fell asleep, he had a cholam. He had a dream. He told this over to the Jews that lived there that he had a cholam, and in his cholam, he saw Zokin Baltzura. This is long after Reb Chaim had left. He saw an old man of Baltzura, and the way he described his height and the way that he looked, it was Reb Chaim Chernevitz that he saw in his dream. And Reb Chaim Chernevitz told him that this Beis Medrash is mine. This Beis Medrash is mine. And I'm warning you, not to touch it and not to bother the Jews that are going to daven there. And after that, Miller understood that there was something going on and he lived peacefully. As a matter of fact, the records indicate that he did whatever he could to protect the Beis Medrash from anything that would harm it. And this was the next door neighbor. As I said, that minyan was being kept until the time of the communists. Not only that, Reb Chaim Chernevitz's shul was seen as a makom kodesh. Jews would go there for pilgrimages. It wasn't just to go daven. The Sheiris HaPleita were going through all kinds of things, mesivas nefesh, just to try to get to the Reb Chaim Chernevitz's Beis Medrash to go and to see it and to daven there. And they felt that it was a skula, that it was something that would help a person in terms of health and pranosa and so on. And there are many, many Nisim, the Skolana Rebbe said that there were many Nisim, many miracles that are associated with visits to Reb Chaim Chernevitz's shul. As I said before, altogether, Reb Chaim Chernevitz was in Chernevitz for 18 years. After he left, to show you how beloved he was in the city, after he left, they refused to take a Rav. They didn't take a Rav. They couldn't hear of it. They couldn't take a Rav until 25 years later. 25 years later, the Rav was a great guy named Tzaduk Yitzchak Shimshon Horovitz Meiselish. He was became the Av Bezdin of Chernevitz, which was a very important city. He was 25 years without a Rav. He became the Rav there, but it says in the Svarim that he wasn't able to stay there for more than a few months. The Maskilim was so strong. The reformers were so strong. The reform movement, the Maskilim, was so strong in Chernevitz that he was simply forced to leave. And at that point, so we're talking now around approximately the year 1830, the population was divided. The Kehillah became permanently divided. This is how it was until World War II, between the Hasidim and the not Misnagdim, the Hasidim and the Maskilim. The Orthodox population in Chernevitz was completely Hasidic. And the non-Orthodox was opposed to not only to Hasidim, but was opposed to Torah and Mitzvahs. And they had two separate communities that lived in a state of terrible antagonism until the war. Now, on his way to Eretz Yisrael, he stopped off for reasons of health that it was difficult to continue. And also, there was fighting going on in the area. It wasn't always so simple to just to take a trip and to go in one shot. So he spent, you know, along the way, he was in a city, I never heard of this town, but he was the Rav in a city called Bachan. I mean, I heard of only Chaim Chernevitz, but he was in Bachan for 3 years, and in a number of other kehillas during that time. There's a story from the period when he was in Bachan. It's a very interesting story. It's a famous story among the Hasidim. as I said, he wasn't feeling too well, and that's why he felt he had to spend some time off the road. So when he was there, it happened that he became so ill once that the doctors were completely misyayish. The doctors completely gave up hope that he would live. And for 3 days, it says in the Sfarim, for 3 days Reb Chaim was lying without breathing. I mean, maybe he was in a coma or something. And they would open his mouth and they would pour soup in. They would pour some liquids into his mouth. He wasn't responding at all. And this went on, as I said, for 3 days. Suddenly, on the third day, he lifted up his head and he sat up in bed and he began to scream. Oi, 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 he began to scream. And they asked him, Rebbe, what is it? What is it? And he says, what do you mean? Don't you see that the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh is here? Oi, he was screaming, the Baal Shem Tov is here, the Baal Shem Tov. So after that, he was very frightened, the Baal Shem Tov, Baal Shem Tov, and they calmed him down and he went back to sleep. And after that, he woke up, and over the next few days, he was fine. He was completely okay. So they asked him, what happened there? What happened with the Baal Shem Tov? What was he talking about? So he said that, at that point, his neshama already began its trip into Gan Eden. His neshama was already kemat. There is a state that we know about from the Svarim where the neshama is a little bit here, but mostly there. And he was in that state where the neshama was kemat, the soul was kemat detached from the body. And he said that he was in Gan Eden, and he saw the Baal Shem Tov there. And he went up to the Baal Shem Tov and he says, Rebbe, asuli toiva shir paini Hashem. Rebbe, do me a toiva, help me out. Ask Hashem that he should give me a refuah. In other words, he said, I knew that I was in big trouble. So I asked the Baal Shem Tov, please, Rabbi, help me out that I should have a refuah. The Baal Shem Tov answered, B'ni, my esalucha, for nigzer hagzeira, my child, what should I do for you? The gzeira, the decree is already finished. There's nothing I can do for you. And then he said, the Baal Shem Tov said, Veza shaychus yesh l'chaymi. And anyway, what shaychus do you have with me? Do I know you? That I should make such a hishtadlus for you? Who are you? What? So, Hayim Hayisa actually, were you ever by me? Atamakir, I see, do you know me? Maybe you heard Vertlach of mine, you heard Torahs, but I don't know you. You don't know me, I don't know you. So this is what he told him. So the Bermaim Chaim said that he told the Baal Shem Tov that you heard of my Rebbe, Ramechel Zlotshevus. Baal Shem Tov said, oh, Ramechel. Because Ramechel is one of the Baal Shem Tov's closest, is Ramechel Zlotshevus, Shiloh. So he said, that was my Rebbe. So he said, Afal Pichin, you're Rebbe, so that doesn't mean that I can help you out. So he said, no, listen, please. And he said to the Baal Shem Tov, that it was the custom of my Rebbe Ramechel Zlotshever that before benching, by Shalosh Shulis, before benching, before Shabbos, before Maariv, that you know that my Rebbe would never start benching until he would tell over a maisif from the Baal Shem Tov, until he would tell over a story from the Baal Shem Tov. You know, it's a beginning to tell over the Baal Shem Tov, Shalosh Shulis, and Motzei Shabbos is a very beginning. So my Rebbe Ramechel Zlotshever never would bench until he would tell over a maisif from Baal Shem Tov. So the Baal Shem Tov says, no. So he said that it once happened that the Suda, the Shalda Shudas, that my Rebbe was saying all these tirus over, these deep things, and Shalda Shudas went ad la'or hayom, until Sunday morning, till the sun came up, that Shalda Shudas was going till Sunday morning, and it was already time. The Mechel Zlotshever realized that Gizma Kirishma Shoshachris, you know, it's time for to daven, it's time to daven Maariv Kaidim and to get ready for the day, for Sunday. Shabbos is over. So he told him, bring my Machroin. So I very nervously, the Rebbe Chaim said, I very nervously said, but Rebbe forgot. So he says, what? He said, the Rebbe didn't say Maisif from Baal Shem Tov. So he said, but it's already Heyer HaBoiker, you don't have. So I said, but Rebbe, that's the Rebbe's custom to say a Maisif from Baal Shem Tov. And he said that my Rebbe said that you're right, and he stopped, and he said over a Maaseh from the Baal Shem Tov, and he said that probably Rebbe, he said to the Baal Shem Tov, you had a lot of nachas ruach from that time that my Rebbe said over from you a Maaseh, all the times, but especially that time. And if that's the case, then Rabbi Yechayev, if you have a hakaras ha-toiv, then in all due respect, Yechayev to do me a toiv. So he said that the Baal Shem Tov said, Sadak to me, Mani, and the Zeus Eslocha, Kiavarechacha, Ubatchuni, Asher Berchosil, Aitoshev Reiko. So he says that I'm going to give you a bracha, it's true. I'm going to give you a bracha. And he said that the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, he saw in Shemayim put his hands on him, and then he began to come to consciousness, and he still felt the Baal Shem Tov standing next to him with his hands on him. And that's when he screamed out, oi, oi, the Baal Shem Tov, don't you see the Baal Shem Tov? I still felt the Baal Shem Tov, I saw his presence in the room, and I saw everybody standing around me, and that's when I called that out. So that's what happened. One of the stories that we have from the time that the Ber Maim Chaim was on the way to Eretz Yisrael. there's another maaseh that I wanted to tell you yet from Chernivtsi that I forgot. It once happened that the Kedushas Levi came to Chernivtsi. The Kedushas Levi, the Bedichtver, came to meet. He didn't come there for business. He came there to meet the Ber Maim Chaim. As we've already discussed, that where the Ber Maim Chaim lived was sort of outside of the pale, where Chassidus was thriving. So the Kedushas Levi went, you know, he had known him as a child, and he was a younger man, and he knew he was a Heilig Yid, he was that the Ber Maim Chaim was a holy Jew, and the Kedushas Levi wanted to go see Reb Chaim Chernivtsi. I told him that he had an investment he felt in Reb Chaim Chernivtsi because he had Reb Chaim Chernivtsi once under the Talis. and the B'ditchev held it because of that time under the Talis that helped him become a big Yerei Shemayim. Because when he saw him later on, he said, that one is mine. And he held them once under the towels. So the Kedushas Levi came to Chernivtsi, and what happened was that he had just arrived, so there was some problem, he arrived a short time before Shabbos, and they hadn't yet met. They didn't see each other yet. And as I told you, that the Ber Maim Chaim was the Rav, so he had to go daven in the big shul. So he went to daven in the big shul. And the Kedushas Levi went to daven in the shtibel, in the little shtibel with the Chassidim. And the story has it that, for whatever reason, Friday night, Reb Chaim Chernivtsi wasn't well. So he didn't see him Friday night. And Shabbos morning, the same thing. Shabbos morning, the Reb Chaim Chernivtsi davened in the big shul. And the Kedushas Levi davened Shabbos morning in the shtibel with the Chassidim. After they finished davening in the big shul, Reb Chaim Chernivtsi went over to sneak a look into the shtibel where the B'ditchever was davening, and he looked in through the window, and he put his ear against the window, and he heard the Kedushas Levi davening. He didn't go inside. After that, he went home. It's already, it must have been 12 o'clock, 12:30, Shabbos afternoon, and he went home, and he sat in the house, and the Rebbetzin, who, as we spoke about a few times ago, 2 weeks ago, the Rebbetzin who caused him a great deal of agmas nefesh on a good day. So the Rebbetzin saw that he was sitting there, and everybody's waiting to make kiddush. And Reb Chaim is sitting like lost in his thoughts, sitting at the table, sitting someplace. So the Rebbetzin went over and she said, why don't you make kiddush? It's already time for lunch. So he said, I didn't daven yet. So she said to him, what do you mean you did? It's 12 o'clock. What do you mean you didn't daven? So where have you been until now? Where were you all morning? So he started to cry, and he says, no, I went to shul, and I said what I was supposed to say, but then afterwards I went to the shtibel, and I heard the Kedushas Levi daven, and I'm telling you, I haven't davened yet. She said, my whole life I never davened. When I heard the Kedushas Levi daven, I realized that my whole life I mamish never davened. Some says that he said, when he heard the B'ditchever's davening, Reb Chaim Chernivtsi said that, on Shabbos, when we talk about the avoider of Reb Chaim Chernivtsi on Shabbos, was altogether Malam HaTov. And on Shabbos, he said that when he heard the Kedushas Levi davening, he realized that he never davened. Can you imagine if we would hear, well, we probably wouldn't realize anything. he probably wouldn't think like that. Mistam, other Jews didn't realize that. They just thought it was like an interesting show, right? Because they say that the Bedichim used to jump around the Bismarck, he used to go on the tables, he used to roll on the floor. It was a whole avoid with him. It was Mamish without any physical, without control over himself. that's a mice that happened, when he was still in Chernivis. There's a mice, another story that we have that was told by the Bobover. The Bobover Rebbe, Zalzaigazun, just had his 90th birthday, somewhere in Swansea. The Bobover Rebbe told a mice. This is a Gewaldige Maisa. Maybe I remember to tell this on Shabbos, because I just saw this Maisa in something that was recently published, that the Bobov has said this over Barabim, and he heard it from also the Skalender, who heard it, you know, it goes back to the real thing. remind me to say this Maisa over to Oilam on Shabbos, the Gewaldige Maisa. So what happened was that one time there was a Chasna, and it was the day or two after the Chasna, there was Shever Brachas. This wasn't in Chernivitz. This is when Reb Chaim was on the road. And he was sitting, the Ber Maim Chaim was by Shever Brachas, together with the Seer of Lublin, the Chayzer from Lublin. They were sitting by Shever Brachas. Now you know that it was a custom of our people in Europe, and here there are very few left of this breed that know how to do this, but it was called a Marshalik or a Badchan. Jesters. Comedians. But as I told you before in stories that we have, these weren't stam comedians. These were, most of them were big Talmid Chachamim. And their joking contained in a very big Inyonim in Torah. And they were able to weave together rhymes and poems and jokes to be Mesamech to Chosn and Kal. So at the Shever Brachas, there was, there where the Chayza was, he had with him this Badchan, this comedian. Well, comedian is not a right thing. A Badchan. He was a famous man. He was called Reb Mordechai Rakover. This Reb Mordechai Rakover was a Jew that was a complete baki in Shas and Poskim, and he was a Makubal. This is how he made a parnasa. He didn't take any money from learning. His parnasa was that he, at Chasnas, and at Shever Brachsen, he would get up and he would say, he would do shtick, but the shtick was all kinds of amazing things. Anyway, so the Maaseh that the Bobover told us as follows. At the Shever Brachas, he got up and he was doing funny stuff and the Chayze was laughing, and the Ber Maim Chaim, who was much more of an intense type, they detected a smile on his face. He was enjoying it. But then all of a sudden what happened was that this Sadiq, the Badchan of Mordechai Rakover, he began to impersonate the Ber Maim Chaim's Kiddush. Now we'll talk about that when we talk about Shabbos, which is coming up in a few minutes. But the Ber Maim Chaim's Kiddush, it was something which they say that by the time he was finished saying Kiddush, they were such koilus of brokim that it was a pachet to see that. So and the way he would scream and so on, and the motions that he made. So this for Mordechai Rakover to be mesamech to chosn and kala, you know that these badchanim usually are mechutzafim, and they're chutzpedik. That's part of their their shtick. So he starts to do this whole routine. He's imitating Reb Chaim Chernivitz's Kiddush. And the people are rolling in laughter, and the Chayze himself is laughing. And Reb Chaim Chernivitz wasn't laughing. He had a terrible chalish. See, he never heard of this with Mordechai Rakover, that he was supposed to be, that he was a big Makubal and a big Tzaddik. He thought he's talking about, an Amcha, a regular Yid, a talented fellow, but he didn't know that this was Mamash, a holy Jew. So he didn't know it. Reb Chaim Chernivitz didn't know who this was. And he sees that and Reb Chaim Chernivitz had a terrible chalish zadaz, because this is avoid of Shabbos. This is the most important thing to him in the world. And this Jew is making leitzanis, and everybody, and including the chayza, they're all laughing. And he screamed out, Reb Chaim Chernivitz, and said, leitzanis, leitzanis. And everybody right away, they stopped, and it's a sure way to stop a party, to mess up a party. So Reb Chaim said Leitzanis, and he was very, very upset. And that's it. After he said Leitzanis, the whole thing stopped. And from that time on, so the Reb Mordechai Krakover sat down. He sat down, but he began to have a terrible headache. I could dekach that within a few minutes, from the time that he told over, from the time that he was joking, from the time that the Ber Maim Chaim called out Leitzanis,
he felt his head was going to burst, and he went home. He was afraid to even go to the Be'er Ma'im Chaim. He just went home, and he fell into an illness, and he was in a machla that within a few hours, the doctors thought that he's possibly going to die. They didn't know what to do for him. So the family, he wasn't even able to speak anymore. So the family the chassidim went to ask Reb Chaim Chenevitzer for mechila, that he was makpid, and they came to Reb Chaim Chenevitzer, and he said, you don't have to be mafias me. I said what I wanted to say, and it stopped, and I'm not makpid. I'm not angry. I'm not upset anymore. So I don't know what you want from me. So they went back, and it was the second day, and they went to the Chayzer from Lublin, and they said to the man was Kimat Agoisis. He was almost leaving the world. He was a big tzaddik. And they went to the Sir of Lublin, and they asked him, what should we do? He says, you have to go ask Reb Chaim Chenevitzer. So they said, we were there yesterday. He said, there's nothing. He's fine. He's not upset. So Chayzer said, go back to him. You have to ask him. So they went back to Reb Chaim. The Reb Chaim said, I told you yesterday that I'm not makpid. I don't know what you want from me. I'm not upset. By the third day, there are two versions of this. When he told over the Maisa, but one opinion is that this Reb Mordechai's Rebbetzin came now with some of the mishpacha, and they start to scream at Reb Chaim Chenevitz, and they said, listen, this is all enough, because why is it that an innocent man should die because of what he did? And what he did, you should know that he did completely l'shem shamayim. His joking and his what he did to imitate, this is all l'shem shamayim, purely 1,000,000% for the mitzvah of Simchas Chasna Kal, to make the Chasna Kal happy. So should it be that you should bring about the punishment because of you, that a Jew should die, a tzaddik should die, that he did something completely l'shem shamayim? So Reb Chaim said, you're telling me that it's completely l'shem shamayim? Completely l'shem shamayim. There wasn't anything that wasn't 100% for the sake of heaven in that. So they said that you never heard of Reb Mordechai Rockever, and he's a big tzaddik, and it was 100% l'shem shamayim. So the Be'er Ma'im Chaim said, you know what, let's see. Okay, let's see if it was l'shem shamayim. And he said, we'll take a test. You say that he hasn't been talking or anything. He said, let's see. You go back to the house, and you'll see he's now going to be a geisis. This is now his last, 15 minutes, half hour in this world. You go see if he's able to tell a joke now, that's a simon that his jokes are l'shem shamayim. But if he's not telling jokes now, so then it's, that's not l'shem shamayim. So they said, what kind of thing? I never heard he can't talk. He says, listen, you're asking me, this is what I'm telling you. So the Bobrova said that they went back there, and he was already, that Chalila, we should know from it, that rasping sound, the whole thing, he was already, the Chevra Kedisha was there, and the Oilim was standing around the bed, and all of a sudden, Reb Mordechai opened up his eyes, and he said, the Oilim Zolom Shuldigin, please excuse me, excuse the Oilim, please move away, the Neshama Daf Araizgain, please, everybody make room for my Neshama. He said, he made like my sonnes. He says, and Shuldigin, please excuse me, everybody, please move away, my neshama is going. So the Oilim saw, and they ran over to Reb Chaim Chenevitzer, and Reb Chaim says, no, what happened? So he said, Imamish said a late sonnes like this. So Reb Chaim Chenevitzer said that it was, you're right, and I was wrong. And there's 100% l'shem shamayim, and he says, and he gave him a bracha, he had refuah shleim, and he lived after that many, many, many years. That Reb Mordechai, the Musa Haskel from the story is a gewaldige Musa Haskel. But I'm not going to go into that right now. That's not my Indian right now to explain the Maisa, but I found it to be a fascinating Maisa, which requires a great deal, like all the stories of Tzaddikim. It needs a good Pirish Rashi and a Radak and a Sephorna to understand what's the pshat and why Reb Chaim Chenevitz. I said this over to, the kids. I said this, I don't remember Shabbos, whatever I said to the children, and they were so upset about the Maisa. Like, what kind of thing is that? What kind of thing to make him go through that and then to tell a joke? So what do you mean? He has to tell a joke in order to save his life. We heard of people who can't tell a joke to save their life, but to tell a joke is... So, that's a maisa from Reb Chaim Chernevitzer. It's an interesting maisa. We'll talk about it more in Mitzvah. We're not going to talk about Shabbos. Shabbos is a separate topic by Reb Chaim Chernevitzer. It's a separate topic because his whole inyan in this world was Shabbos. I mean, that's what he... Different tzaddikim came for different things. Rabbi Nachman said that the ikkah he came for was tefillah, was for davening. And there's no question that Rabbi Chaim Chernevitzer's inyan was Shabbos. And he wrote the first sefer, Siddurus Shabbos, a sefer just on the subject of Shabbos, which at that time was very unusual to write svarim like that, because the svarim were all written on parashas. Except for Tanya and Yoisha Divrei Emes, the svarim were all written by the parashas of Shavua. Different things that the tzaddikim said by the table. Rabbi Chaim Chernevitzer sat down and wrote a sefer, Siddurus Shabbos, which is learned till this day, which we're going to learn with Shem plenty of. Some pieces we'll talk a little bit today from something. And so regarding the Reb Chaim Chernevitzer and Shabbos, regarding his avodah bechlal, the way that he served Hashem, is brought down in the svarim from the name of tzaddikim, that they said that they said this about the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, Reb Chaim Ibn Attar, and about the Be'er Mayim Chaim. They said about the two of them, shechidushu eich hoyu machzikim es atzvam b'haguf shalahem, that the chidush of the Or HaChaim and the Be'er Mayim Chaim was how was it that they were able to hold in the shomas in their bodies? Because of their great love and fear of God, it was a miracle by these two tzaddikim, the Rechaim HaKadosh and the Be'er Mayim Chaim, that they were able to hold in the shomas into the guf. There was such the avoid, there was with such a hav and yira that they said it was a pella that they were able to hold in the shomas into the guf. Now that was b'derech klal, meaning that they were speaking about the Be'er Mayim Chaim on a daily basis, how he was able to do that. But when it came to Shabbos, it was a whole different thing. We already learned the first time, 2 weeks ago, when we spoke, 3 weeks ago about the Be'er Mayim Chaim, that he had a brach from his Rebbe, the Maggid of Zlotchev, that Rabbeinu, well, I don't know if it was a brach or it was a description or a nevuah, that the Be'er Mayim Chaim is yoinek mikedushas haShabbos v'tanugeha, that his neshama was drawing from, was being sustained by the holiness of Shabbos and the delight of Shabbos. therefore, the avodah of Reb Chaim Chernevitzer on Shabbos is something which is completely chutz megidrei teva. I just wanted to read to you a paragraph from the pretty much in the not all the way at the beginning, but in the first section of his famous sefer on Shabbos called Siddur Shel Shabbos. So you get a picture of what we're talking about. This is something that he was writing. He says that the kedusha of Shabbos, the holiness of Shabbos, is greater than all of the yom tov, all the yontivs, the mayadim that Hashem has commanded us. All the other yom tov require an awakening, an arousal from this world. You have to do something to bring down the light from above. You have to wake something up from down here below. That's what all the other Yom Tov. Manochen v'roi hoi yishatochu kudusha Shabbos ha'kol Yisrael b'shova miktana v'agadoylam bein hefrish ha'socha mihamaskil v'chabar kechochem ka'am kakoyen v'efshagam v'hoi yikatzadi kerosh kevin she'enim ishtana l'fi pelosum ha'sein. He says, now, since Shabbos does not work like that, all the other Yom Tov have to be drawn into the world. That's why the Bezdin has to be Mekadesh the Yontif, right? When it comes to all the Mekadesh Yisrael Vasman. When it comes to Shabbos, Shabbos is Kvi V'Kaima. The Kedusha of Shabbos, as you know, descends into the world every seventh day, regardless of what happens down here below in this world. So Chaim says, therefore, you would think that everybody should have the same feeling on Shabbos. If Shabbos is something that does not require man's initiative, but it seems to descend upon the world, then Reb Chaim says, you would think, therefore, that it wouldn't be necessary, that everybody would experience Shabbos, whether he says it's a tzaddik, a rosh, a child, an adult, everybody would experience the same Shabbos. That's what you would think. That our preparations and our actions would have no effect upon it. And this whole section is to show how, of course, the aura of the light is coming down, but you have to make yourself into a proper vessel to receive it. That's what the whole section is about. So he writes here, Then why do we see the tremendous difference that there is and the change that takes place and when Shabbos comes by the Chochem and the Tzaddik, by the wise men, by the Tzaddik, we see such a tremendous change taking place. That you could see with your eyes that the holiness of Shabbos is burning in his heart like a fiery coal. And he's just pouring out his own heart, right? That the holiness of Shabbos is burning mamish like coals. And even with a great amount of water, you wouldn't be able to extinguish the great flames of love that are there with the tzaddik on Shabbos in his heart. And the tzaddik is inflamed with this tremendous desire to serve Hashem throughout the night and the entire day of Shabbos. And he therefore desires to add on many more hours to Shabbos, both when Shabbos enters, and when Shabbos ends, he's always seeking to add more time to Shabbos. Now listen to this. The near lakol, and everybody can see. That the tzaddik is almost going to die on Shabbos because of his love of Hashem. Because of the great fire of love that's burning in his heart. The sake of Acher Hatvila Be'erev Shabbos. And when do you begin to see this? He says, right after the tzaddik goes to the mikveh on Erev Shabbos. Right after he goes to the mikveh. He used to go to the mikveh by Chatzos, by the middle of the day. Nikarolov, you could already recognize this. Noitzitzus Kedusha Shabbos and Meir Alponov, you could already recognize the fire of Shabbos on his face. And a doime ponov shalodim kol yimaisa Shabbos kamayishu b'Shabbos, where the Gemara says that a person, the Medrash says, that a Jew doesn't look the same on Shabbos. And who could even tell the story? Who would even be able to describe how the tzaddik's face is different on Shabbos than it is during the week? Is far like the east from the west. But you don't see this by regular Yidden. You don't see this by regular Jews or by Jews who are on a lower level. So he's saying that when we mekabel Shabbos and mizmor shel yom haShabbos, ish bahar lo, an empty person, a fool, a low person, lo yeda, he doesn't know what Shabbos is. Uchsil lo yovenizos, and the fool doesn't understand what Shabbos means. Im Shabbos hayom im yareviv libyisal, whether it's a Shabbos or it's a Wednesday. So he said this about, he was saying this about himself. I mean, he was saying in the sefer, it wasn't supposed to be autobiographical, but mamish, whatever he's describing here is exactly what was seen on the Be'er Mayim Chaim himself. Ad kedei kach, that here we have one of the most famous things that's found in the Chassidus Sfarim, and this was, again, we have from an Eidus, which I'll show you the Eidus, where this comes from, but it's Yadua Umafursam by the Jews from wherever Reb Chaim Chernevitz lived. That from the time that he would come back from the mikvah on Erev Shabbos, he was between a head and two heads taller than he was during the week. And that's something that, besides the shinu that took place mamish on his face, which I'll describe in a second from one of the svarim. But akid dekach, that they said that when he would wear his Shabbos clothing during the week for a bris or for a family wedding, because then you wear your Shabbos clothing, that when he would put on his Shabbos coat and Shabbos pants during the week for a bris, that it was hanging completely dragging on the floor. And the same coat that he wore on Shabbos fit him perfectly. And this was something that was seen by, not by hundreds, but by thousands upon tens of thousands of people, how he changed with Shabbos. And the Sekelenu Rebbe said that he heard this from his father, who heard from his grandfather. That Skelena heard from his grandfather, who was in Chernivitz and saw the Be'er Mayim Chaim. So Skelena Rebbe, all of Shalom, the less Skelena Rebbe, heard from his grandfather, who saw this with his own eyes. That when Chaim Chernivitz was on, when he came from the mikveh, that all the Jews' children used to come, people would come and see that Chaim Chernivitz was a head taller than he was during the week, and that when he wore the godim of Shabbos during the week for a bris, or whatever, that they would be all over the place. He'd be swimming in that they'd be dragging on along the ground. And the Sefer Kavutzis Yaakov, he brings from his father, who was a big tzaddik, Reb Shmuel Margolius, from Zolochik. He says, Sha'alti es Avizal. So the author of the Kavutzis Yaakov says, I asked my father, Im emes hadover, shahoylam oimrim ahalber maim chayim. Is it true? Because the father was in Chernivtsi. Is it true what the Oilam says about Rav Chaim Chernivtsi, about the Ber Maim Chaim? Shemin Erev Shabbos Ach, this is in the Sefer Kibbutzis Yaakov. Shemin Erev Shabbos Ach at Tvila, that from the time he went to the mikvah on Friday, ad Ach Shabbos till Shabbos is over, haya gavoya im Erech Shnei Roshim, that he would be approximately 2 heads taller, 1 to 2 heads taller than he was during the week. Amalai. So he says, my father told me, Bini, my son, Ati Adati ki ain daraki ilagazim. You know that my way is never to exaggerate. V'chiani medariti kamosa. Do you think that I walk next to the Rebbe with a tape measure? You know, in other words, you're telling me 2 heads ahead. I never went to measure. That I never went with a tape measure. Achzois armelacha. Be'edus brura. But this I will tell you with edus brura complete, and I'll testify to this. I used to see him go every Friday to the mikveh. I would see the Rebbe go to the mikveh. And I would see the Rebbe when he left the mikveh and he would walk back from the mikveh. And I'm telling you that he was not the same person that left. And he looked like an entirely different person. Bitoy aro, his face, how it looked. Who become also in his height, who become toya gufo in the size of his body, hakadosh hayimushuna legamrei mibirishayna. It was completely different than the way that he looked going into the mikveh. He says, "You know, ain't daraki lahagzim. I never exaggerate. I'm telling you that he was a completely different person." And it says in the Svarim that his face was an entirely different face. It was ain't a dime at all. It was ain't a dime to the face when he came out from the mikveh. And this was a dov yadua by Reb Chaim Chernivtsi. Also, I told you last time that from Wednesday, Reb Chaim Chernivtsi would begin to go to the stores and to go ask them to give for the poor people some challahs for Shabbos. And Reb Chaim Chernivtsi used to go walking through the streets called Shabbos, the covered Shabbos. He used to go to the all up and down the streets of Chernivtsi, and he would besides getting for the poor people, he would himself go shopping for Shabbos. It's brought down in the Svarim that he never let anybody go shopping for Shabbos. He would do it himself. And that he also never, even in his old age, he never let anybody carry any of the bags. And he wasn't putting it in the trunk, you understand. And he never let anybody schlep any of the bags for Shabbos. He used to go back and forth as an old man, carrying the potatoes and everything. He used to schlep all the food for Shabbos from Wednesday. He was doing this every day. And he would be saying the whole time, look, Shabbos Kodesh, and he was going like this through the streets with unbelievable tirchus, and never ever to let anybody carry a thing for him that it was the covered Shabbos. And when people would come over to say, please, Rabbi, please, he would say, Shabbos, no, you're not allowed to touch that, that's Shabbos. And this is just the beginning. Next week we'll talk more about the Shabbos of, what we have, the stories that, of Reb Chaim Chernivtsi Shabbos, and then, within the Mitzvah, the week after, we'll be able to already start learning the Siddur Shal Shabbos a little bit, and to start Mitzvah. We might need, we need probably two more weeks of talking about the Tzad, about the life, because we still didn't talk about Eretz Yisrael, the Tzvas, but what he carried on in Tzvas with Shabbos. We'll talk about that. This was all in Chutz Laaretz. That was before he got excited. We'll talk about when he came to Tzvas. It was an altogether different Madrega. Shkoyach.